Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court, my name is Brian Frelkeld. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I'll be arguing on behalf of Elias Munoz. In sentencing Mr. Munoz, the District Court accepted the government's argument that on the basis of Guideline Application Note 5, it should push his sentence outside the guideline range. The Court accepted the government's reasoning that the maximum guideline enhancement for the number of documents, which caps out at 9 levels for 100 or more documents in subsection B2C, reflected the failure of the Sentencing Commission to anticipate an organization of this magnitude operating over such an extended period of time. Now, the district judge's reasoning on that point really is not consistent with the history of the guidelines and the commission.
Well, doesn't the application note to the guidelines contemplate that a judge can give a higher sentence if there are substantially more than 100 documents? And here, there were certainly substantially more than 100 documents. You don't quarrel with the number of documents, thousands of documents.
No, it does, and presumably some increase above the guideline range would have been warranted, would have been reasonable given the number of documents beyond 100. But Mr. Munoz's guideline range in this case was 27 to 33 months. It's clear from the court's explanation of his sentence that were it not for the mitigating factors of his age and his immigration status, which would see him presumably at the end of his sentence deported to Mexico and separated from his family in the United States, most of whom are American citizens. Were it not for those factors, the government, or rather the court, would have imposed a maximum sentence, statutory maximum sentence of 60 months. That would be almost twice the upper end of his guideline range. And you know, we've all seen district judges in sentencing outside the guideline range refer to a mitigating factor or an aggravating factor and explain, well, you know, I think that it's worth that, you know, that factor is worth one offense level or two offense levels, and explain that as their reason for the particular sentence imposed. In this case, a sentence that was at 60 months would have required an offense level, which was his offense level was 17. And at criminal history category 2, to get up to 60 months would have required an offense level 6 or 7 levels higher than his actual level of 17. And if we look at, there aren't a lot of precedents that have applied application note 5. But in the ones that the government cited, we see that there were two levels, at most three levels of increase, where the judge treated it as though it warranted an increase of two or three offense levels.
Well, see, it wasn't just the number of documents, but he participated, at least as I understand the record, on a daily basis for 13 years.
Well, and the judge in discussing that factor seemed to include it in his discussion of why a guideline sentence was warranted. But when it came to why she was imposing a sentence above the guideline range, she focused on the number of documents. The district judge.
What's wrong with that? I've lost the thread here.
Okay. The Judge Williams was saying as I understood it, the number of documents wasn't the only factor here. There was also the length of time of his participation. But the judge did not refer to that factor in explaining why an above-guideline sentence was warranted. The judge specifically...
You lost me completely. Why aren't the documents enough to justify the higher sentence?
The documents are enough to justify a higher sentence.
So
it's the extent of the increase that
it's very slight. I don't understand. This is a very light sentence.
It's his guideline range was 27 to 33 months. Again, were it not for the mitigating factor, it's clear that the judge would have imposed the statutory maximum.
That would have been entirely appropriate, in my opinion.
I don't think that's it's warranted in the history of how courts have applied Application Note 5. They've gone up two levels, maybe three levels.
I don't understand that.
Pardon me?
I don't understand you.
And they've gone up those levels when there were the thousands of documents like we had here?
Not as many as this, but in
right.
cases
so
of...
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's a problem because mm-hmm. you don't have a situation, you know, where a sentence has been deemed unreasonable for the judge going up as many levels as she did here. Those other cases that you're referencing, there were fewer documents, weren't there?
Yes, there were. But the judge again didn't. For example, the judge was saying that commission hadn't contemplated such a huge mm-hmm. number of documents in a case. Well, the fact is that it had some examples of cases dating back to 1999, where there were thousands of documents. But also the commission is surely aware that advances in computer technology, digital photography.
Under Booker, a sentencing judge can have her own view of, you know, relative gravity of different crimes. She doesn't have to conform to what other judges are doing, as long as she has reasons for what she's doing.
Well, and the judge didn't set forth reasons here.
What do you want her to say? Thousands of documents. I don't know what more there is to say about it.
The
more documents, the more serious the crime.
Yeah, but again,
what do you want her to say?
Well,
or is it your view that number of documents doesn't make any difference?
No, I don't think that it does.
Right? I mean, you admit that thousands of documents makes a difference. Now, what's the basis for saying it should be 33 months, 50 months, 60 months, 40 months? I don't understand. It's also vague.
Well, I think that the judge was vague. And
you're vague.
No, well, I've got to deal with what the judge was saying.
No, you could come up. You could do some study of sentencing of different mm-hmm. crimes, and you could present some argument which said, no, this sentence is too severe. You look at other crimes and this and that. You're not doing that.
Well, and I did. I looked at the precedents that the government cited, and that again, the even with thousands of documents, the courts had imposed a far less severe increase.
Judge Pallmeyer can disagree with him. I disagree with him. I think it's a serious crime. I think this kind of increase is entirely.
Well, if she disagrees with it, then she can explain
why it's not reasonable. You haven't given any reason. You haven't said, well, other crimes, people do this, they do that, this isn't so serious. No one's hurt. I don't know. You can make a lot of arguments which you haven't made.
Well, again, we have precedents involving thousands of documents. And
you're missing the point. She's not bound by those precedents.
No, she's not. But she should, explain what is different in this case.
Well, she does, because she says, it seems at least plausible to believe that the drafters of the guidelines didn't have this magnitude of an organization and this length of time involved when they came up with the numbers of a scale on which the court should consider. And then, you know, she talks about the number of documents. But, I mean, that's when she gives her explanation as to what she... You know, why she's basing her sentence on it.
But her explanation is not persuasive. Because
this is one of the most thoughtful sentencing statements that I've seen in a long time. And she goes on, you know, mm-hmm. long-standing, well-established, enormously lucrative, and so on and so forth. I don't know what more you expect her to say. You could challenge every sentencing statement ever made I don't understand it. I do not know what else she could have said.
She could have related it concretely to the...
You have no concreteness in your argument. And you are not suggesting what kind of concreteness she might have.
Well, I'll let my argument stand. I think it was concrete, so I'll simply...
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Trout. Now, Mr. O'Malley?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eugene O'Malley, and I represent the appellant, Elias Marquez. Judge, similarly, he was sentenced by Judge Pallmeyer, and he was sentenced to a considerable departure upward. The sentencing range for Mr. Marquez was essentially, I think, of 31 to 43, and he was sentenced 60 months.
Yes.
60 months by Judge Pallmeyer. And what I take issue with on behalf of Mr. Marquez is that she utilized his personal characteristics. I'm referring to 3553A. She utilized his personal characteristics of being relatively well-educated and also a long-standing work history in Mexico. She used those characteristics as an aggravating circumstance rather than a mitigating circumstance. It seems to me that, in general, someone who's conscientious, hardworking, well-educated is not...
Now, wait a second. You're saying well-educated people should get lighter sentences?
Well, it's his conscience.
What you're saying?
I'm saying
that is most... That is preposterous beyond belief.
His conscientiousness, his hardworking...
Conscientious, hardworking criminal.
Well, he resorted to crime because of the lack of work in Mexico. It's not a justification for crime. But,
I'm surprised what you say, that the suggestion that well-educated people should get a sentencing break.
Well, I think what I mean by is I think the his education is a mitigating circumstance, Your Honor.
I do not understand you. Well-educated people should get lighter sentences.
He faltered in. Because of his
well-educated need. People should get heavier sentences.
Well, that was Judge Pallmeyer's
position. They should know better, and because they have more legitimate opportunities than uneducated people.
Well, his circumstances...
Yeah, exactly backwards.
Well, Mr. Marquez's circumstances were that he couldn't get work in Mexico, and that's why he came north.
But, and as the judge, she noted that unlike many of his co-defendants who came to the U.S. to escape poverty, he had... been and had limited options. Marquez was an engineer. He'd had more than a decade of employment with the Mexican government. I mean, that's how she viewed it. And the other thing is she found him to be a significant player, even though he had only been involved for a year, and he was credited with creating approximately 30,000 documents in 1 year, right? He was very productive in that 1 year.
Your Honor, I would take issue with the number of documents. There was a material witness...
Approximately 30,000.
Well, Mr. Cordero was a material witness who was given immunity in this case. He testified that he worked alongside Mr. Marquez, and he claimed the documents made, and he was a government witness, there were 25 to 30 a day. And keep in mind, the site of the selling of these documents was in Chicago, where there aren't going to be documents sold during the dead of winter. So you can't just simply multiply the number of days.
Wait a second. What about dead of winter? What does that have to do with it?
Well, the vendors, the maquiros in this case, would sell the documents outdoors. And I would take issue with simply multiplying the daily production of documents times 365 days.
And was that disputed at sentencing? Was that number challenged, the 30,000, in that 1 year? Was that challenged?
We submitted the argument that there was that number of documents was inflated by the government. Mm-hmm. And their own witness testified at a hearing and was given immunity, and he testified to 25 or 30 a day.
Was there evidence that these illegal document sales are lower in the winter than in the rest of the year? Or is this just some speculation?
I think it's a fair.
I don't think it is. I mean, this isn't the North Pole. There are a lot of people outdoors during the winter. But if there were evidence which said, yeah, this is a seasonal business and people don't get these phony driver's license in January, fine. But there's no evidence of that, is there? Is there?
The evidence is
about the seasonality of this business.
Well, that's my submission, Judge.
Is there evidence about the seasonality of this business?
It's not specific evidence in this case.
What is specific evidence? General evidence or no evidence?
There's not evidence, Judge.
Thank you.
Okay. Judges, I'm. My argument essentially is that the involvement of Mr. Marquez was essentially for about a year, and this conspiracy went on for many, many years. His role was minor compared to the average participant. He wasn't involved for he was involved for a very small fraction of the conspiracy. And I would submit that the reasonableness would demand not an upward departure, but deference should be given, as most cases are, judges, to the guideline range. So I would submit that a fair sentence in this matter, a reasonable sentence in this matter, would have been the guideline range rather than a departure of some 19 months above the high end of the of the range.
Okay, thank you, Mr. O'Malley. Ms. Sanu.
May it please the Court, my name is Mary Sanu, and I represent the United States of America. The District Court acted reasonably when it exercised its discretion in sentencing Mr. Marquez to two concurrent 60-month sentences. One of the discussions that went on this morning was whether she could consider his educational and employment background as an aggravating factor in his overall sentencing. The judge acted appropriately in exercising that discretion. She noted that Mr. Marquez had an impressive educational background. As Judge Williams noticed, he was an engineer. He also was a teacher. He also owned property and a business in Mexico. One of the documents that he submitted in support of his sentencing was a document from another business that he purportedly contracted with in Mexico, saying he was taking a year leave of absence. So today, his argument that he didn't have employment in Mexico seems to lack substance. The district judge didn't limit her discretion to the consideration of his educational employment background. She also noted that he was a significant player to the extent that he was communicating with the organization leaders. He was trusted with over $200,000 in the organization's money. He participated in the production of a staggering amount of documents in the 1 year that he concedes that he was involved in the organization.
And what about counsel's challenge to that number? Was that preserved? Was that raised?
No, it was not. He conceded in both his main brief and his reply brief that he was not challenging the district court's the number of documents relied upon by the district court, nor did he make an argument to that extent at sentencing. With regard to Mr. Cordero, it's my understanding that Mr. Cordero was only involved in the organization for approximately 2 weeks before he was caught and cooperated with the government and was subsequently deported back to Mexico. Mr. Marquez's situation was substantially different. He was operating within the office of the organization day after day for over a year. He was monitoring the financial losses. He was orchestrating counter-surveillance activities. He was negotiating prices with the Maqueros. And he carried out these functions day in and day out. So whether or not he personally created those 27,000 or 30,000 documents that were created in those years, they were all done under his supervision or command. I'd like to talk a little bit now, if there are no more questions about Mr. Marquez, about Mr. Munoz. And with relation to Mr. Munoz, the district court exercised her discretion reasonably in imposing a sentence of 48 months imprisonment. That sentence was 15 months above the top end of the guidelines. And the judge reasonably observed the guidelines accounted for 100 documents or more. The Sentencing Commission never addressed an organization of this magnitude. Mr. Munoz, unlike Mr. Marquez, admitted to his participation in this organization for over 13 years. He created the photographs for nearly all of the false documents that were created for those 13 years, and he concedes that he created thousands and thousands of those photographs. He had a unique relationship with the organization in which he wasn't just standing behind a counter taking photographs for the Maqueros. He allowed them to bring their customers into his store. He allowed them to negotiate with their customers in his presence in his store. He allowed them to collect their information in his store, and he provided the forms which they used to collect the information and the envelopes in which they packaged the information and put it together for the runners. So his participation in this crime is substantial, and she did take that into consideration. It is set forth in her decision. She also considered his age and the fact that he will be deported after having lived in this country for 30 years, but I don't think she was doing a factor-by-factor offset against the guidelines. She considered, as she was required to do, his sentence as a whole. So if the court has no questions, we would simply ask that you affirm both sentences for Mr. Marquez and Mr. Munoz.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sandell. So Mr. Threlkeld or Mr. O'Malley, do you have anything further?
I've said what I wanted to. Thank you.
Mr. O'Malley, yes.
I may, Judge.
Sure.
Judge, the government indicates their belief is that Mr. Cordero here is just a matter of weeks. He was doing the same job that Elias Marquez did for a four-month period, and the government chose not to prosecute him. Both these men, Cordero and Marquez, were under the supervision of a man named Bonifacio, who was essentially their authority. And any activity that Marquez was involved in was at the direction of Mr. Bonifacio.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And Mr. O'Malley, you were appointed. We thank you for your appointment, and we thank Mr. Threlkeld and the defenders for representing Mr. Munoz, and we thank Mr.